Well, we're in here today because we did a study yesterday on for young people, and for those young people trickling in, I want you guys to sit up front as Ellis tries to disappear like I didn't see him. I'll be honest with you, I'd really like you guys to do this all the time. I can't do, but I can force you to today, so we're going to do that. We're going to talk about a subject that is every parent's worst nightmare. And that is the subject of dating. And let me tell you why it's our worst nightmare, because I'm pretty familiar with this, having three kids. Our worst nightmare is not the fact that our children want to date. Our worst nightmare is that our children will date like Samson. Now think about that for a moment, if you're not familiar with Samson. Samson had a knack for picking all the wrong women. In Judges 14 and verse 2, he comes up to his father and mother and he says, "I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as a wife." And his father and mother said, "Is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives or among our people that you must go take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me, for she is right in my eyes." And so his parents go and get this woman, who, by the way, it turns out to be an awful decision for him. And much of Samson's dating life is terrible. In fact, young people, if I can tell you one thing about where not to look for dating advice, it is in the book of Judges. Don't look there, especially in the life of Samson, because he is a terrible role model. So yesterday, when we got together, I gave a survey out to these young folks that were here, and I asked some questions. And the big reason I asked those questions was for this morning's lesson. I asked several questions about dating. Like, for instance, what is a good age to start dating? One of my favorite answers was 30. There was a 25 and a 23. But the majority of them, about half, said 16 years old. Now, follow that up with this question. Why should children or teenagers be allowed to date? Here's the answers of that. To try it out and meet someone. To make relationships with other Christians. I will tell you, by the way, you can make relationships with Christians without dating them. Because when you're both the same gender, that's a little awkward. Okay? To practice and find what you want in a spouse. I won't comment on that. To find what they want. It gives experience to make mistakes and learn from them. For a better half, companionship. To potentially find someone to marry. To test the waters. I'm not really sure what that means. And then my favorite was, because when you are old, the good people are taken. That was a great reason, by the way. Now, why are the reasons? The third question was, why are the reasons teenagers should not date? And here was the answer. It's dangerous. They're too young. Sexual sin and temptation. They were too young and don't understand some concepts. What I find really interesting is sometimes you would have these people that said, "You should date when you're 16. Why should they not date? Because we're too young." Which is it? And then sometimes people would say on the same piece of paper, "Well, you need to date somebody at 16 to find a companion, but you need to be careful of sexual temptation." And I couldn't help but think, reading that, going, what age do they think they're getting married at? 17 and a half? Does that mean any harm? If you're dating to marry at 16 and you're not planning to marry until 25, that's not a good plan to avoid some temptations. Which goes back to, they may be too immature to understand some of that. This morning, I just want to talk about dating together. And I want to do this in hopefully a way that helps us all and gives us some practical advice. The first thing I want to do is just take a historical look at dating in our country and kind of how that's evolved. Years ago, if you wanted to date somebody, you actually wouldn't date them. You would court them. You would court them. And some of you may remember that process. When a young man reached the time he was thinking about marriage, he would look to find an eligible woman in the area or young lady in the area he lived. And when he chose the one that most appealed to him, he would go and consult with her father and ask for permission to court his daughter. And the father was agreeable. And by the way, he had the final say-so to agree or disagree. I'm a big fan of that aspect of this. It was an arranged relationship to a degree, but not fully. The courtship involved one man and one woman spending intentional time together, getting to know each other, purposely evaluating one another as a husband or wife, and it typically occurred in the home of the female. He would go to her home, and he would spend time with her in the presence of her family. By the way, courtship moved rather quickly. It moved towards marriage rather quickly. That was the intention. And the moment the individuals thought they did not want to marry, then they would shut that down. Well, early in the 20th century, that evolved into what we call dating today. And there's a logical reason for that. We began to live in urban areas where men and women in their family context were in smaller dwelling places that did not have parlors to entertain suitors. And so that time they moved from the parlors to public places like the theater and dance halls. And they even, by the way, early on, dating in its truest form early on, was dating multiple people at the same time, which is scandalous today. It's interesting. Sometimes you discover things you may not want to discover. We found, my father-in-law's here, but he laughs about this too. We found my mother-in-law's, for lack of a better term, little black book. And in that book, she kept a meticulous record of all the guys that she dated, which was stunningly a large list, by the way, with the dates. And upon examination, we began to see that there were multiple dates on the same night. I mean, different guys on the same night. Now, I don't know if you realize that, but for people today, and we'll talk about this in a minute, that's just not allowed. If you do that now, you're a player, is what you are. But back then, that's what dating... By the way, my father-in-law laughs about that. He did the same thing. We've had those conversations. But let me tell you this, that when somebody wants to describe this, it was a grandmother who had done this, and she said, look, the one rule we had in my house was you were not allowed to go out with the same person two nights in a row. You had to date multiple people. And in its truest form, that's how dating started. But by the 1950s, that changed. Beth Bailey wrote in her book, From the Front Porch to the Back Seat, Courtship of the 20th Century. She says, quote, in earlier days, going steady had been more like the old-fashioned keeping steady company. It was a step-along path to marriage, even if many steady couples parted company before they reached the altar. By the early 1950s, going steady had acquired a totally different meaning. It was no longer the way a marriageable couple signaled their deepening intentions. Instead, going steady was something 12-year-olds could do and something 15-year-olds did do. Few steady couples expected to marry, but for the duration of the relationship acted as if they were married. Going steady had become a sort of play marriage, a mimicry of actual marriage. And that brings us to this next idea that is what we call going steady. Now, that's not what kids call that today. That's not cool. It's something probably more on the line of we're just hanging out, right? But what's interesting about that is you're only allowed to hang out with one person. Not more than one person. And so if you think about that, this recently, I think a couple years ago, what they described this as, by the way, is you were a thing. Is that still the terminology? Jillian's my translator. There's like five, apparently. One of them is, we're a thing. Okay? And a thing means that you are together and you're not allowed to be with anybody else. And so, by the way, and part of that is traditional dating has a very negative connotation. We've dealt with this in discussions with our kids. Why don't you just date multiple people? Dad, you can't do that. Well, why not? Well, if you go out with more than one person, well, then you're not a good person. Wait a minute. You mean there's this expectation when you're 15 years old that you have to focus only on one person? Yeah. That's how it works. And that seems to be the pattern. Well, that's what was called going steady. And let me tell you what happened with that. What's happened with that is, along with this idea, there has been a rise in promiscuity. Because there is an early commitment at an early age by young people that aren't able to truthfully handle that maturely. Not only is there promiscuity, there's a rise in the divorce rate. That almost can be traced back somewhat to this same kind of practice. And it is more likely that this going steady model has kind of influenced that. So much so that a man by the name of Josh Harris wrote a book in 2003 called I Kiss Dating Goodbye. You might have heard of that. And his idea was to remove all kinds of forms of dating and go back to traditional courting. But the problem with that is that among those couples, by the way, the surveys that have been done among those couples is that hasn't produced any lower of a divorce rate either, if that was the goal. There's one more part of this that we need to kind of understand. And something that's not often talked about that here, but it's important. And that is the development of the concept of being a teenager. Maybe you never thought about this, but pre-1900s, if you were about 15 years old, you were already working and married and probably were close to having a kid. But in the early 1900s, there became this development of child labor laws and there became this kind of protection of young people, and we developed this concept that we call teenagers. And we took this section of people in our society that at one time were an active part of our society about the age of 13 when they were to get a job and were married by 16 and had kids by 19. We took them and we kind of set them aside with this block of lower expectations. And I don't know if you realize, but there are way lower expectations today for teenagers than there used to be. For instance, even when I was growing up, there was an expectation in my home at the age of 16, you got what was called a job. And there was an expectation in my household that at 16, if you wanted to drive a car, you had to pay for it. At the very minimum, the gas, the insurance, and probably the car. And I don't know if those of you are like us that have teenagers, that's not really the expectation today. In fact, here's what I hear. Well, Johnny just can't have a job. He's too busy with schoolwork. Anybody ever heard that before? It's too tough. And between sports and school, there's no time for him to have a job. And so there's just no way for him to do that. So here's what we've done. We've taken these people that, by the way, when you really look at it, some of them at the early ages of teenagers, this you call now, helped develop our country. And we kind of set them aside and say, y'all just get to play and have fun and not do anything. And that's okay. And we kind of put their growth and development on hold. But at the same time, we let them take on mature decisions like dating. And there's this conflict between those two things. And so we've encouraged a group of people to have lower standards and not grow up as quickly. Meanwhile, in dating, what they have done is it has evolved into this very mature relationship that really is marriage in practice. Let me tell you what being a thing really means today. It means you're married, but you're not. You're only supposed to talk to that one person, but you're not supposed to spend time with anybody else. That's your only person in life. Let me tell you, when I think about that, I think about marriage. That's what marriage is. And so we have 16-year-olds that don't have a job, that have not been forced to grow up, that aren't held to some kind of standard of accountability, who are given the freedom to act like married people. It's kind of a disastrous combination. Now, the question we've got to ask is, what does the Bible say about dating? And so let me give you the clearest answer I can about that. Absolutely nothing. Maybe you've not thought about that, but if you open up the Bible, you're not going to find the concept of courtship or dating in there. Going steady, none of that is in there. In fact, in the Bible, marriages were arranged. And as a father of two young ladies, I'm kind of all in favor of getting back to that pattern. Not going to happen, unfortunately, but I'm a big fan of it. But if you look at places like Genesis chapter 24 and verses 2 through 4, Abraham said to his servant, the older of his household, who had charge of all that, he said, put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but will go to my country and my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac. Abraham sent his servant back to where he was from to choose a wife for Isaac. Did you hear that? Abraham sent his servant to choose Isaac's wife. That's not how it works today. We don't outsource mate selection to our hired hands. But they did in the Bible. And one of the earliest concepts of really a male selecting his mate is in Genesis chapter 29 and verses 21 through 25. But Jacob says there to Laban, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." And Laban gathered together all the people to my place and made a feast. But in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Verse 25, "In the morning it was, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, 'What have you done to me? Serve with you for Rachel? Why have you deceived me?'" Why did Laban give him Leah instead of Rachel? Because it was his right to do that. Because truthfully, Jacob didn't get to choose. And so he said, "No, you don't get Rachel until you take Leah." And so here we have this problem. Biblically, there's no command, there's no pattern, there's no anything about dating or courting or going steady. So what's the answer to all of that? Well, let me tell you what the answer is. This is an area where parents are going to have to decide what works for their home and their children. Now, the difficulty of that is we're not very good at really respecting those boundaries sometimes. We like to kind of look over at what somebody else does in their home and make all kinds of judgments about their home versus us looking at our own home. But the reality is we have to look at this and say each set of parents gets to decide what works for them. So what we're going to do in the remainder of our few moments together in class is we're going to take some time to talk about some wise ways to do that. How can we find godly wisdom that we can be able to talk about dating in such a way that is ready? And so the question becomes, let me ask this, is your child ready to date? That's your first question. Is my child capable, mature enough, ready to date? And I got to tell you, some people draw lines about that. We used to. We had an age, we had established at an early point with our kids of when they could date. It was 35 years old. At some point when Peyton got older and we realized how long he would have to stick around, we decided he could date as early as he wanted to, hopefully to express his exit out the door. Sadly, he has not taken us up on that offer. He is still around. The girls, however, age is still 35. And they're pretty aware of that. So any of you that look at my two daughters and think you may want to date them, you got a long time to wait. 21 years for Jillian, 25 for Jamie, just so you know. If you'd like to work those 25 years like Jacob did for Laban, I've got plenty of work for you to do. But the reality is, and we joke somehow, but that's how we are sometimes. There's an age. So some people say, "Well, my child will be able to date at 16. Which is obviously when our kids think they should be allowed to date. And so he says, "Well, I think kids could date at 14. Well, is that how you determine that? Somebody goes, "Well, my kids can date when they go to college. Or my kid can't date until they're out of the house. Or my kids can date when they start to drive." I'm not sure judging whether your child is capable of handling something should be done by a particular milestone in life. Or even whether they can drive or their age. And I'll compare it to this. I'll compare it to the acceptance of the gospel. I don't believe there's a magic number for the age of accountability. Neither do I believe that there is a magic milestone that my kids can't become a Christian until they leave home or until they get to high school. I don't believe any of that. But I will tell you this. What I do believe is that a child, when he is old enough to understand the truth and that his soul is in danger and he understands those concepts, then he's old enough to understand the responsibility of being a Christian. And that may happen at 10, and it may happen at 21. And I view dating much the same way. So, let me give you some guidelines then. The first of those is your child responsible? We're going to get into the Scriptures. I want you to find Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon. There's a statement made back here that I think is just fantastic in regards to this question. Is your child responsible? Song of Solomon, chapter 8, and verses 8 and 9. By the way, if you're looking for it, it's after Ecclesiastes. It's small and it's tucked away back there. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, and verse 8. This young lady's brothers speak about her and says, "We have a little sister. She has no breast. What shall we do for our sister on the day when she is spoken for?" Look at verse 9. "If she is a wall, we will build on her a battlement of silver. But if she is a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar." What does that mean? This is poetic language. Let me tell you what it means. If she's a wall, then we're going to praise her. And what does it mean by the word wall here? And if she's a door, then we will lock her up. What they're really talking about is the idea, the problem of promiscuity. If our little sister is a chaste young woman, if she's one who is trustworthy, who it appears will not do things she should not do, we will praise her and we will let her to roam, essentially, and be praised for her maturity and responsibility. But now, if she's a door, if she's promiscuous, if anybody can walk through that door that wants to, we're not going to let her leave the house. And what they're talking about here is responsibility. The problem with setting parents an arbitrary age or milestone is what happens when your child is mature, but you've set this arbitrary milestone. I know parents who have said just emphatically, "My child will not date till they go to college." I will tell you, that's not our rule. One of those reasons it's not our rule is our kid's going to college that leaves in a couple weeks, 10 hours away. I would have preferred to be a little bit more involved in his advising him and counsel rather than having a phone. But the second problem is, if your child has this arbitrary rule of not till college, but they're mature enough and wise enough to handle that, then how are we not provoking them, as Ephesians 6 and verse 4 tells us not to do? I think a big part of parenthood, and we'll talk more about parenthood probably at some point, but a big part of parenthood is knowing when to trust your child and when not. Knowing how to reasonably assess their maturity and ability to handle the right situations. And by the way, it is possible for two kids from the same parent to be completely different in this area. Turn to 2 Samuel 13, which is going to be the strangest place to go for this. But I want you to see a difference. In 2 Samuel chapter 13, it is the story of Amnon and Tamar. But you look here starting in verse 10 of 2 Samuel 13. And I want you to know the difference between these two young people. "Then Amnon said to Tamar, 'Bring the food into my chamber that I may eat from your hand.' And Tamar took the cakes that she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. But when she brought them near him to eat, he took hold of her hand and said, 'Come lie with me, sister.' She said, 'No, my brother, do not violate me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this outrageous thing. As for me, where can I carry my shame? And as for you, you would be as one of the outrageous fools in Israel. Now therefore, speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you.' But he would not listen to her. And being stronger than she, he violated her and lied with her." Now what makes this story really difficult for us is these are siblings. They're half-siblings. They share a parent in common. We could debate whether he's a good parent or not. But I want you to notice that Prince Amnon has no right. He is immoral. He is wrong. He is not responsible. He cannot control his emotions. He cannot control his lust. And on the other side, Tamar is responsible. She says here, let's obey our father. In fact, she obeys her father by going into Amnon. That's the very reason she's there. And not only does she obey her father, she is responsible in saying, "No, we cannot do this." And then she even says, "If you will just do the right thing and ask our father, if you will go about this the right way." We can talk about that later. But the reality is, two kids, same father, one acts responsibly, one does not. And so make sure you understand that the problem is with your children, if you have three kids like I do, the reality is not all of them are the same. And some of them might reach different ages of responsibility at different ages. Can't just say, "Hey, they're 14, they're all the same." Doesn't work that way. So you have to make a judgment about your child. Is your child responsible? I tell you what, and this is what's interesting to me. I find it interesting that there are parents who won't let their kid drive their brand new car, but will let them go and be alone with a member of the opposite sex. If your child's not responsible enough to borrow your car, they're not responsible enough to date my daughter. I don't trust your child, and you shouldn't either. You have to make those judgments sometimes. Secondly, and this is important, is your child committed to Christ? In this survey, they kept saying to find a mate, to look for somebody to marry, companionship. Let me tell you something about marriage and relationships. Your child needs to have a relationship with God before they have a relationship with somebody else. They need to have a relationship with the Lord, because that relationship dictates all of our other relationships. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verses 22 through 25 is that section where it says, "Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord." And you look at verse 5, "Husband loves your wives as Christ loved the church and clapped for her." You know what that passage says? That marriage, the relationship between a husband and wife, is patterned after your relationship with Jesus Christ. And you can't have a good marriage unless you have a good relationship with Christ first. And so our children should not be dating until they have a good relationship with Jesus. By the way, Ephesians 6 and verse 5, employer-employer relationships, what's that pattern after? "Bond servants, obey your masters with fear and trembling as you would Christ." All of our relationships are patterned after our relationship with Christ. John 13, 34, this new commandment that He gives, what does He tell them to do? To love one another as I have loved you. You can't understand that until you have a relationship with Jesus Christ. One of the great problems with young people dating at an early age sometimes is they don't have a relationship with God first. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 11, listen to this. "But as for you, O man of God, flee these things. Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness." As a general rule, when young people have pursued righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness, when they make that a priority, then they are capable of dating, I think. And if not, they're not capable. So let me close with some advice. First, for the parents, and then I'll get to you guys. This first one you're not going to like, by the way. So just close your ears, ignore it if you want to. Parents, get involved. By the way, at our house, there's this understanding. There is no right to privacy at the Francis house. So I can be all up in your business because I'm your dad. And if you don't like it, I don't care. That applies to your phone, to your room, to your car, to your dating life. I get to be involved in that. And I shouldn't provoke you to anger, as Ephesians 6 and verse 4 says, but I also have the responsibility in that verse to bring you up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. I can only bring my child up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord if I am involved in their life. The book of Proverbs was compiled and put together because of a meddling father. I don't know if you realize that's what that is. It is 31 chapters of wisdom of a dad who thinks his son isn't ready yet. And so he gives him 31 chapters of him meddling with his life. Listen to this, Proverbs 1:8. "Hear, my son, your father's instructions. Forsake not your mother's teaching." One, "My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you." Proverbs 3:1. "My son, do not forget my teaching." 3:21. "My son, do not lose sight of these." Proverbs 4:1. "Hear, O sons, a father instruction." Proverbs 4:10. "Hear, my son, accept my words." By the way, we're just through chapter 4. 27 more to go. And over again, you have this idea of "hear, my son." So let me take a moment to have some parent-to-parent advice. This is not God's advice. This is my advice. So take it for what it's worth. It may not be worth anything to you. If your children are dating, you need to be involved. And I tell you where I think for us, where that begins, and we've had this conversation with our kids, that the moment you decide that rather than just kind of going out on dates with somebody, you want to take that relationship to the next level, before that's going to even be discussed in our family, us as parents will meet with that other person's parents. And the parents will sit down and discuss what that relationship's going to look like. Let me tell you why that is as a parent. I can set all kinds of rules at my house for my son, but when he goes over to his girlfriend's house, I have no idea what goes on over there. And oh, he's going to tell me, but quite frankly, I also don't trust my kid all the time. Why? Not because he's a bad kid, but because he's like I was. And I remember purposely trying to deceive my parents about things. And so I'm going to remove that temptation from him. And us as parents and their parents will discuss things like boundaries and expectations and values. And quite frankly, as parents, we can't reach an agreement on those kind of things. For instance, there is a rule in our house that does not just apply to boyfriends and girlfriends. But members of the opposite sex are not allowed in your bedroom. Ever. No matter what. First off, with Peyton, that's because we want the girl to like him, and if he saw the bedroom, she would never talk to him again. So it's protection on his part. But secondly, because inside a bedroom with closed doors, there's no protection going on. So if my child's going to date your child, we need to have that same rule. Because my child's not allowed in your child's house in their bedroom. Not allowed. Another rule. You are not allowed to be at anybody's house without a parent at home. Ever. Under any circumstances. Why? Because that's when bad things happen. And so those kind of rules need to be established. And if I come back from that meeting with those parents and we're not in agreement, guess what? They're not dating that person. I don't care how much they like them. Because my child's soul is at stake. Nobody influences your life more than who you date and who you marry. So parents, don't be afraid to be that involved. Don't be afraid to tell your children they have to have permission. And they need advice and they need blessings from you to do certain things. Secondly, pray. Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Even if I set up every rule I set up. Here's the reality of young people and dating. They're going to try to break them. Intentionally or unintentionally. And one of the greatest things we can do in regards to this situation with our kids is pray and give our worries over to God. And pray specific prayers that our kids don't enter into specific temptations. I think one of our downfalls about prayer is we are not specific enough. We speak in generalities. But when this is talking about your anxieties and your worries, I think you need to give details to God about your anxieties and your worries. And here's what I believe about that. When you do that, God is faithful to answer us. And we've got to put more power in prayer than we do. And so as involved as you may be, do not forget to pray. All right, let's talk to the kids. Hold on. Number one, slow down. Slow down. One of the concerns I have with dating is that it is supposed to lead to marriage. Let's be real. You don't date somebody that you decide you're not going to marry. But at 16, you're not ready to get married. Even if you think you are. And we need to slow down. The wise man said in Ecclesiastes 11:9, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment."
have fun
as a young person. But remember, God's going to judge you for everything you've done.
Can I just say bluntly, I don't like this going steady practice at 16. I just don't.
And I don't care if that's unpopular. I tell you why I don't like it. Because what you are doing at 16 when you are exclusive in that relationship and that's the only person for you and you're talking about how much you love for each other and all of these close, intimate things, you are acting like you are married. You are practicing marriage. Most often with somebody you don't intend to marry. You're seeking companionship that you should be finding at that age in your parents, in the Lord, and in friends rather than in one person and only one person. You're building a sense of intimacy that you are not mature enough to handle, nor are you mature enough to control, and you're rushing into a commitment that, quite frankly, you are too young for. Slow down. Let me tell you something. There's going to come a time, if you get married, that you're going to look back, and this isn't anything negative about marriage, but you're going to wish you had taken the opportunity prior to marriage to slow down and enjoy those days of your youth, because there's a lot of responsibility that comes with a relationship like that. It's not always fun. That's just the truth. Not discouraging anybody from getting married. That's great. But when you're married, you've got a lot more responsibilities than when you don't. Don't rush into that. Secondly, don't be like everybody else. You know why young people get into a thing and date like that? Because that's what everybody else is doing. Don't be like everybody else. Romans 12 and verse 2 says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, good and acceptable and perfect." We're supposed to be different. Now, the problem with that is at your age, you don't want to be different. You want to look like everybody else. You want to dress like everybody else. You want to talk like everybody else. You want to listen to the same terrible music like everybody else listens to at your age. That's what you want. Don't. Don't do that. Be different. Third, remember God. After Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9, and him saying, "Enjoy your youth, but remember God's going to judge you," he says this in Ecclesiastes 12, and verse 1. "Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, which you will say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" God is more important than dating. Your relationship with God is more important than dating. And a lot of times what happens with people at your age is that you rush into dating, but you don't rush into a relationship with God. You've gotten that backwards. There are some of you here who have already practiced what we call dating, but you don't have a relationship like you should with God. And that's backwards. Fourth, think about who you date. Like most fathers, Brandon's in agreement. I'm all for arranged marriages. Just not going to happen. And I know that. So you get to choose who you date and who you marry. I want you to think about that for a moment. Is the person that you like, does he or she make you a better person by being around them? Do they dress in ways that encourage you to be godly? Or do they dress in ways that encourage you to lust after their body? Do they challenge your faith and help it grow? Or do they challenge your faith and make it shrink? Do they take you places that you don't want your parents to know about? Or do they lead you in paths of righteousness? 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 says that bad company ruins good morals. Choose the wrong person, they will lead you down the wrong path morally. By the way, I gotta say this.
Don't date somebody just because you go to church with them and think that that's okay. Because that's not a guarantee that they love the Lord. A lot of young people go to church with you just because they're made to go. Not everybody who attends the assemblies actually loves God. That's not a good test. A good test is whether or not they love the Lord. And finally, obey your parents. I had to put this in there because it's one of my favorite passages. That Ephesians 6:1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for it is right. But verse 4 also says that it is your father's job, your parents' job, to bring you up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Let me let you in on something. You guys look at us and you think we don't get it. We're too old. We don't understand. We don't listen. We don't know what you're going through. You think as you look at us that we just are meddling in your business and we're causing you too much trouble. Let me tell you one thing. First, yes, we are meddling in your business. And the reason for that is simple. I, one day, will have to give an account for how well I meddled in the business of my three kids. That's what parenting is. Parenting is telling your kids how to live right and how not to live wrong. And when you see them going down the wrong path, you stop them from doing that. And I got to tell you, if your parents love you enough to meddle in your business, today what you need to do is hug them and thank them. Because the reality is, if your parents don't care enough to get in your business and try to keep you from doing wrong things, they really don't love you like they should. Discipline is tough. We don't like it. But we do it because we want to stop you from pain. And so when parents get all up in your business and you want to get mad and storm off, remember, they do that. Stop looking at each other. Peyton and Jillian. They do that. We do that because we love you. Amen. And we see you about to make a decision and a mistake that maybe we made. And we're trying to stop it. Okay? So obey your parents. We're out of time. I would give Brandon more time to amen, but we're about out of time. Certainly, let me say this. There's no foolproof way to protect our kids from making dumb decisions. But we can pray that God will protect them and watch over them. And we can do everything within our power to influence them that way as well. We're going to break. Kids, I want you to sit up here again for church this morning. I know. It's the one day I get to tell you that. All right, young people, stay up front. And we'll break until it's time to begin our worship together. Thank you.